everybody, and welcome to the Necromaniacs podcast. I'm here with my buddy Mike Scandato, and we're getting ready to kick off another episode.
Yes, it has been 3 months since the last one. It was at the beginning of March. I remember it was snowing. It was miserable. And now here we are, just at the end of May, going into June, and it's already getting hotter and hotter. But I'll take that weather over the weather we were having at the last podcast any day.
Our last episode was a winter horror movie podcast, and now it's we're pretty much on the verge of summer. Mm-hmm. So we took a little bit of a break there.
Yes, sometimes life happens.
Yeah, you know, it's like I was in Europe for a while, a bunch of stuff going on, and proximity and logistics kind of kept us away from doing this. But we're back in action now.
We are back in action. We hope to be monthly throughout the summer.
So for this episode, we got two new movies. We got It Follows and A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. And there's a couple other related things I want to get into. Mm-hmm. So you want to start with It Follows?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So you want to do the old honors there?
Yeah. It is the second movie by director David Robert Mitchell. It's his first horror film. The movie he did before this was called Myth of the American Sleepover, which was a 2010 coming-of-age movie. So to go from something like that into something like this is a very interesting jump. But basically, It Follows has been... I don't know. I feel like within the last month or so, there's pretty much been nonstop talk of it on the horror message boards and on Facebook. And deservedly so. I think this has been probably something that'll go down as one of the best horror movies of the year thus far. Would you agree, Mike?
I think so. Another key point of that movie is the awesome soundtrack by Disaster Piece.
Absolutely, yeah.
Out of Staten Island, New York, I believe.
Yeah, very young man from Staten Island who the director had found because he was a fan of an online puzzle game that he did the music for as Disaster Piece as well, called Fez. I know nothing about this online gaming kind of community, but apparently the music is really cool and synth-driven.
Yeah.
And he was a fan of the music of this game and was a fan of the game and just contacted the guy, and that's how it all came together. Pretty funny.
The other thing about this movie, it has this sort of anachronistic like vibe to it where initially you think this movie might have taken place in the 80s.
Yes.
But then I hear that thunder, man.
Yeah.
It's like some atmosphere here.
Nice atmosphere, yeah. Yes. I thought so too. In one way, you could say, well, you know what? It exists in its own time, in its own kind of universe or whatever. But at the very, very beginning of the film, the girl we see on the beach does use what appears to be a cell phone to leave a message for her father. But that is one of the only instances of modern technology throughout the rest of the film, barring the very bizarre clamshell thingy, I don't even know what the hell to call it, that one of the girls in the film is always kind of looking at and looking things up on. So you could say it is fairly modern, but no one is on the computer at any point throughout this movie. No one is even, I mean, there's not a lot of like modern teenage kind of cheesy dialogue or anything like that at all in this film. So it has a lot of 80s, maybe early 90s kind of sensibilities to it in that respect. But I kind of like the answer of it existing in its own, just its own kind of world, its own kind of universe.
Yeah.
In Detroit, though. It is shot in Detroit, Michigan, and it does take place in Detroit, Michigan, which is pretty cool. But kind of like an Earth 2 Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is, man. It could be like, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths where there's
alternate absolutely.
Realities and multiverses. And, you know, there is a very heavy Detroit vibe in the movie. Mm. That's kind of, you know, Michigan depression kind of trip going on.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things I liked about this movie. The music being one of the highlights of it. But I like the fact that the actors were true to age. They got some young actors to play young roles. And if you're one of the people that thinks the movie was kind of like a take on a loss of innocence and how sex is, like when you have sex, that is when you have crossed that threshold and your innocence is over. I thought the use of the young people with that in mind was really kind of cool and interesting.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of different, you know, sort of conjecture. There's also a very heavy themes of paranoia that run through the movie, mm-hmm. too, and anxiety.
Yeah.
And, I mean, basically the movie's about what's amounts to a sexually transmitted disease in a way.
Yes.
You know, like, there's no explanation as to where these entities come from, but the way that it's transmitted is by when two people have sex, mm-hmm. the recipient of this curse, or if you will.
They call it, yeah, they keep saying it's it. Like, they just refer to it,
yeah,
as it.
Yeah, it's it. It's like a vague sort of term. Mm-hmm. This, like, entity who appears to be someone that they may know or may not know at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it just sort of appears. And no one else can see them but the person who's infected by this condition, for lack of a better term. And then they hunt them down. And if that person is killed by the entity, it goes back through the line back to the original person. And then I don't know what happens. You know, they don't explain anything after that.
No. And I was, you know, doing my research, and the director is okay with the fact that there was no explanation for it. There was no it origin.
Yeah.
He was, you know, which I think is great too. I mean, why does it need an explanation? I mean, I kind of like how it's in this kind of dreamy, otherworldly, you know, Detroit kind of suburb. And at the same time, you know, you're not kind of handheld through what's going on. You're just kind of experiencing it. It's kind of like the movie has kind of a nice, fairly fast pace to it. I was not bored at any point. And I think the music actually helped that too, obviously.
Yeah, I agree.
But I feel like, you know, it's just something that somewhat close to the new Mad Max, you just experience it. You sit there and you enjoy it. But there's been so many analytical, you know, essays and whatnot on this movie. But I just try not to get lost in things like that. You know, like I'm trying to just kind of enjoy movies as movies in a way, you know.
Yeah, there really isn't, in a way, there really isn't much of a plot to the movie, basically.
Right.
I mean, it's just like kind of this vibe. And that's where a lot of people talk about the dreamlike qualities of the movie, where things are sort of, unrealistic and surreal, and how there is no explanation. You sort of, like, emerge into the storyline kind of in the midstream, really. You know, it opens up kind of in the middle of the story, and there's just, like, a situation, like, similar to the way people have dreams.
Well, it's interesting to know that at the very beginning of the movie, there's a young guy and a young girl going on a date, and they're in a movie theater. And since the movie's in Detroit, Michigan, it has a connection to the Evil Dead, because that is the actual theater where Evil Dead premiered in 1981, actually, which is a nice little nod to the horror past, I thought. And also I've read that the main character's name is Jay, the girl. Which is a nod to Jamie Lee Curtis, apparently.
Huh.
And the sister in the movie's name is Kelly. And wouldn't you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's sister's name is Kelly. So I thought that's pretty damn cool.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I mean, they give all these little subtle nods to everything, you know.
And I definitely, you know, got the Halloween vibe at times, absolutely. And another movie that came to mind was Nightmare on Elm Street, the original. I definitely like where you think that, you know, the whole kind of dreamy atmosphere and dream vibe. But oddly enough, one of the only times the characters appeared to be safe in this movie is when they were asleep. It's kind of like the opposite. You know, like Jay was able to get some peace sometimes when she was, you know, unconscious.
Oh, is that true?
Well, I feel like that's what I remember.
Yeah, because there was that one scene, mm-hmm. where the guy, that like Hesher sorted guy.
Yeah, across the street.
Yeah, that scene was like creepy. And then
that was very creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few things that, I mean, I'd like some explanations for, but, you know, I mean, I don't know if I'm going to get them. There's one thing of note. There are almost no adults in this movie.
Except for the dad, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And at the very end, I feel like, you know, was that the dad on the roof? That kind of that scene where there's the naked man on the roof? Was that actually her father? Like, you kind of can't really see. He's kind of a bearded kind of guy, you know?
Yeah.
And then the guy at the very end in the pool, was that Her dad?
The guy at the pool at the end was her dad.
That was her dad. Yeah. That's creepy as hell and weird.
Yeah.
Because another thing I was wondering is, if it wasn't her dad, was it one of the guys on the boat? There's a very infamous boat scene that's hotly discussed in this film, where some people think that she went out to that boat and had sex with those three strange guys in order to just buy some time and throw it, you know, away from her for a bit and pass it on to someone else.
That's what I get out of it, too.
That is what I got out of it. But then some people are like, well, maybe she got out there and maybe changed her mind. I mean, because she was wet when she got into the car. Like, remember, there's like a scene where, you know, she's clearly out of the water. I mean, it's kind of a very kind of creepy and original scene, I thought. I was just like, wow, what is she doing? Like, who are these guys? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, my first instinct when I saw it in the theater, I was like, wait a minute, is she doing what I think she's going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I picked up on the fact that she was going to go out there and have sex with those guys in the boat.
Wow,
you know, just to get the curse away from her to follow someone else.
Yeah, poor girl. You actually feel for her. Like, very sympathetic character, I thought. I mean, you know, and a great acting job as well.
Yeah. I agree with you. There's like, when I think of the movie, if I were to liken it to something else, I would say, yeah, Halloween. It kind of has the same colors that the Halloween movie have. It's like this sort of grayed out, you know, coloring to it. It has like that, autumn vibe that the Halloween movies have. Mm. And there's like this sort of feeling of impending doom all the time and paranoia.
Yeah.
Like similar to like, you know, how Michael Myers is just this, you know, lurking presence that would hunt people down. And that's kind of how the quote unquote it manifests itself in the movie. Mm-hmm. And then also with the dreamlike quality of it is almost like a David Lynchian kind of vibe to it, because how in a lot of Lynch's movies, there's really no explanation for some of the things that happen. And somewhere in It Follows, there's absolutely no explanation. There's no, like you said, there's no origin, there's no reasons, there's no even explanation as to what the mechanics of this thing really
right.
is.
It's just through sexual contact, through sex. Like, yeah. And apparently the director had said that, you know, same-sex sex or sex with or without a condom would have made no difference. It's just any form of sex. But obviously, there are no scenes of either nature in the film, but it's something that other people had brought up to him. And he addressed it.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I also feel that there's a thing about being a teenager in this movie that's undeniable, and about innocence and about the loss of innocence and about the separation between a teenager and adult. I definitely saw that. Like, there's a scene where she's lining up blades of grass on her leg. And then sure enough, later on in the film, that's where the cuts are. Like, you know, like some teenagers are into cutting.
I mean, yeah.
Not me or any of my friends.
I never got into it.
It's
more,
I feel like, you know, a lot of different era of that type of thing going on. But it kind of, you know, alluded to that. And there's also possibly, like, I mean, aside from the STD thing, maybe like a sex as like a drug kind of thing as well. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you could look at it. I feel like sex is definitely an important part of the movie, but at the same time, it can be interpreted, you know, other ways as well. I like your David Lynch kind of thing going on, because there's definitely moments of like just this kind of like you're questioning what is like, you know, what is happening, what's real, what is she seeing that's real and isn't real, you know what I'm saying? And like, you know, not psychedelic, but just kind of trippy in a way, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like dreamlike.
Dreamy. You know? Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I thought was funny in the movie, actually, and I laughed when this part came up, even though it really wasn't that funny, but is when in the first scene where Jay is in the car with that guy, right? And she's going into this, like, you know, very whimsical description of love and how, you know, she's always dreamed of having a, you know, some boy or man in her life. And then right in the middle of her description of that, he just puts chloroform. He has a rag filled with chloroform.
Yeah, that was a brutal moment, actually. That kind of took me by surprise.
Yeah. And then like she's tied up in a chair. And
yeah.
Like, like, I think I was the only person in the theater who thought that was funny. But.
And something else, in the very beginning, when the guy and the girl are on the date, the guy is talking about, well, he sees a young kid, a little boy, and he talks about, wow, you know, what's it like to be like that, to have no cares, to have no worries, to be completely, you know, innocent, you know?
Yeah.
And that theme carries throughout the movie, like the innocence and the loss of innocence and the staying young versus becoming an adult. I don't know. All these things are kind of stuck with me, you know, as I watched the movie. I've only seen it the one time, as you have. We both saw it in the theater at different times. But I cannot wait to see it again.
Yeah.
On, you know, at home, on, you know, on Blu-ray or DVD, because I know there will be things that I think I might have missed and things that I might pick up on, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I can't remember the last time a new horror film has, like, you know, brought so many different types of discussions and, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the movie was made for $2 million and it has grossed over 20 so far. That's pretty damn good. And it's, you know, it's fairly, it's only in like, you know, the smaller kind of independent theaters.
Where did you see it?
Oh, I saw it at Nighthawk.
Yeah, I saw it there too. And yes. Nighthawk is a theater that's in Williamsburg in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I saw it like on a Monday night at like 10 when no one went. And it was like, there's like eight people in the theater.
It's the best place to see a movie in New York, I think, in my opinion.
Except for the weekends.
Right.
And weekends are jam-packed with people, so.
But yeah, it's independent theater, and you know they serve food and alcohol, and there are no terrible trailers. Like all the trailers are akin to the movie that's going to be played, and they have all this kind of cool like promo stuff from old movies going on. I mean, it's just if you're a movie fan, it's the place to go.
Yeah, it's a very cool theater. Sometimes the people that go there ruin it for me, though. I got to be honest. And like I remember even on that Monday night when I went to go see it. I was walking down the stairway into the theater, and there was some guy on his cell phone, and he's like, "It Follows is so fucking awesome, man. It's the fucking best movie I've ever seen." And they made me want to just fucking leave because I was like, this guy ruining my experience again, you know?
You know, actually, I'm going to correct myself because The Babadook is also has been extremely talked about and extremely discussed and dissected, but I will say I enjoyed It Follows more than The Babadook. And it's a different kind of movie, but I think It Follows is a bit more, you know, up my alley.
Yeah, I was going to say it's more of my kind of film than The Babadook. I enjoyed that completely. That was a great movie. But like that kind of, even though It Follows isn't a slasher movie,
right,
it's informed by like those 80s like slasher films that I love and I grew up on.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
So that resonates with me. You know, like it's definitely, like I said, Halloween. You know, and not anything like Phantasm, but there are certain moments where it reminded me a little bit like Phantasm.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, honestly, two things brought me to Phantasm. Certain parts of the music, of the soundtrack, which is just amazing, by the way. You can get it on iTunes, and you can get it from Disaster Piece himself on his website for only $7.
Yeah, on the Bandcamp.
Yeah. And the other thing was just, again, going back to the young characters and the co-stars. And just remembering, you know, young Mike and in Phantasm and just those moments of being alone. And again, almost no adults in Phantasm either.
Except for Reggie, really.
Right, exactly. You know? But he's, they're young adults.
Yeah,
they're young
dudes. Reggie's like a youthful adult.
Right, exactly.
He's not an authority figure.
No. And just not a lot of, there's nobody walking around anywhere in Phantasm. Have you noticed that? There's like, there's no, other than the people, like there's no extras. There's just, it's very like desolate kind of movie. And same for It Follows. There's not a lot of background people or background things going on. It's just these characters in the movie pretty much. It's kind of cool.
It adds to the sort of dreamlike quality of it too, because there's like the absence of other people in that movie. Actually, the very ending where they're walking down hand in hand and there's like these two people behind them.
Yeah.
Because there was never anyone else in the movie, I thought that, oh my God, this is like the fucking it coming after
them. Yeah, see, that's the other thing. It leaves it open-ended as to whether or not this curse is over or not.
Yeah.
And of course, there's already been discussion of a sequel that may or may not give us this origin. I almost hope there isn't, to be honest. I don't want a sequel to this movie.
No.
I want it to be left alone.
Yeah.
But I guess we'll see what happens there. It's definitely been talked about from what I understand. But I don't know if I want to know the origin. I mean, unless it's some fantastic, you know, they pull some fantastic story out of it. But I don't know. I don't know if I want to see that, right?
Yeah, I think it should. I mean, I know the tendency in horror is to make sequels and, you know, build a franchise.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, I kind of wish it would just, I want it to stay a standalone
movie. Yeah,
there's no
physical killer. There's no masked man. There's no, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't, I don't know. There doesn't need to be a franchise about this, you know? Yeah, I guess we will see.
So that brings us to our next film, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Well, one thing I want to say about this was at last year's Comic-Con in Manhattan at the Javits Center, there were these girls walking around dressed up, kind of looking like the vampire character, handing out postcards for this movie. And I thought that was a very interesting and cool little gimmick that the movie had. It came out, I guess, late fall. It hit some
theaters. 2014.
Right, 2014. So, yeah, that always stuck with me, actually, until I actually finally saw the movie.
So, the movie was directed by Anna Lily Amirpour. She's an American. Mm-hmm. I thought she was Iranian, actually.
She's Persian American.
Yeah, but she's an American director.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shot in Taft, which is in Kern County, California.
In California, yeah.
Yes. So
a couple of misconceptions about the movie. Number one, that it's a foreign film. Number two, that it was shot in Iran or Iraq.
Yeah.
And that it's very interesting. Go on.
You know, it is the first Iranian vampire Western.
Yes, that is true.
Its own description.
I would say that. That's true.
Yeah, and it's set in a fictitious town known as Bad City.
Which, I'm under the impression that town is supposed to be in the Middle East as well, even though it is California. The fictitious, like, you know what I'm saying, like the setting may not be America, so to speak. That's what I got out of it, because there's all these people speaking that, you know, the other language in the movie. Yeah.
And the story is based on a graphic novel that Lily produced with the same name, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars Sheila Vond as the girl.
Mm-hmm.
And Arash Marandi as Marash.
He did a fantastic job, by the way. I thought that guy was great.
Everyone did a great job in this movie. I mean, similar to It Follows, not really a lot goes on plot-wise in this movie.
It's not
a
at
very
all.
Just
less,
like,
actually.
Yeah, like everyone, all the characters just kind of exist in this setting. And, you know, basically this town of Bad City is being preyed upon by of the vampire, this girl who's, you know, a undead denizen of the night.
Very, very young looking undead. Very, almost, I mean, like a young teenager almost. She looked up to me, I thought.
Yeah. And, you know, I found her to be very striking, in my opinion.
Yeah, very attractive.
If you check my my Instagram, there's a nice portrait of her in there. And, you know, just the movie was like very, you know, very hip, very stylized, like real. It's like a Jim Jarmusch film.
Yes.
If he were to make like a, you know, an Iranian vampire Western.
And maybe a slight cousin to the movie we loved last year, Kiss of the Damned. Not a ton of similarities.
Yeah.
A little stylistically and musically some similarities.
Yeah, and the music is like, actually, there is another movie that I feel like is a direct predecessor to this movie called Nadja that came out in the 1990s.
Yes, which we discussed
before. We'll get to that after this. Mm-hmm. But basically it's a love story, really. You know, it's this guy Arash, he's like a loner. His dad's a drug addict. There's like gangsters after him because of his father's debts. There's like that guy in the running suit with all the tattoos, that dude.
Oh my God, the kind of pimp guy. Yeah, like, there's all these kind of really cool, shady, pulpy kind of characters in the movie. Almost film noir, pulp kind of characters,
Film noir by way of maybe Quentin Tarantino.
Yes.
You know, there's like a little bit of that, a little bit of Jim Jarmusch, like very, you know, sort of like hip, modern takes on all these types of characters. And even the girl, like there's the vampire. She's like a skateboard riding.
Definite hipsterish kind
hipster.
Of girl.
She listens to vinyl records.
Pretty. Yeah. And the other cool thing is, like It Follows, no clue what year this movie is.
It could be any time.
There's no modern anything really in this movie.
Yeah, there's like a cat in the movie too. Which
oh
I like.
My God. Okay, Masuka the cat. I have to bring this up. This cat Not only is it probably one of the cutest cats I've ever seen in a movie, the cat literally steals scenes in the movie. Now, I don't know if it's on purpose or not. He's in certain frames for very long periods of time, and he just kind of looks out, and he's kind of stealing the movie as he's not really looking at the camera. He's looking, like, kind of past the camera. And they keep the camera there, like he's like in between the vampire and the guy. Remember that scene in the car?
Yeah, definitely.
It was unbelievable scene. Like, and a lot of people online are talking about Masuka the cat, and supposedly none of that stuff was intentional. But when she saw it in the, you know, yeah, going over the film, she kept it all just like that.
No, that's awesome.
It's very cute and very. Yeah. It kind of takes away from the horror aspect in a way, yeah. But as I'm a big cat person, so I just thought it was so great to see a cat in this, a vampire movie featured like that.
But, you know, the movie wasn't a very horrific film. You know
no,
what I mean? Like,
no.
Like I said, it really is primarily a love story between Arash, you know, this loner guy, not a lot of friends, and then the ultimate loner, you know, an undead, you know, beautiful young woman, mm-hmm, who probably the loneliest out of any loner is a vampire.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
So there's that sort of, like, romantic chemistry in the film. And then, you know, It's a love story. And there's that awesome scene where they kiss, and there's like, it's 2.5 minute long scene where they're just kissing each other.
There are these nice kind of long, quiet scenes where there's just music in the background.
Yeah.
And there's no dialogue. Somewhat reminiscent of like earlier the Scorsese moments or maybe the Tarantino moments. You know what I'm saying? And I thought those were actually very nice and very cool. And also, the whole movie is in black and white, too, by
yes,
the way. I don't know. I just thought it was very different and fun and has, you know, and absolutely has, like, you know, romantic kind of vibes throughout the whole movie. Is it a horror movie? Yes. Kind of, I mean, you could say it's a horror movie, sure.
Yeah.
You know? But it's also kind of like an indie drama love story also. It's weird. It's hard to kind of pinpoint what it is, you know?
Yeah, well, it's definitely a horror movie, mm-hmm, because, you know, people get bitten and you know,
right,
die and stuff like that, you know? And there's that one scene in the very beginning of the movie where there's this like, dried out riverbed filled with dead bodies, you know, that were all her victims, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, that's very horror movie-esque.
Well, there's something that has come up that there's a prostitute in the movie who's in, you know, several scenes in the movie, you know. Some people think that she possibly is the mother of the vampire. I don't know about that. What do you think about that?
I didn't get that.
Me neither.
Like, what were the reasons behind that? Like, well, I don't see that, really.
Maybe their interactions?
Huh.
But they, I mean, I think that's more of a stretch, really. I mean, I think certain people who didn't, maybe were looking for more kind of answers and didn't like the abstractness of it are kind of, like, reaching with things like that. You know what I'm saying? They look, there is a possibility, and I mean, a similarity in the way they look. But
wow,
who knows? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, they're, you know, ethnically, they, you know, everyone kind of like has the same ethnic background in that, mm-hmm, film. They're all like Middle Eastern and, you know, dark hair, dark eyes, you know, that,
well,
kind of trip.
Well, and both characters were lonely and sad characters, definitely.
Actually, that's like a big theme in the film is, mm-hmm, loneliness, man.
Yes.
Like even Arash's dad, the heroin addict, is like a lonely character.
Who misses his wife.
Misses his wife.
Definitely some sadness in this movie.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's like a very moody kind of film,
mm-hmm,
but it also is kind of fun too.
Yeah,
you know, there's
yeah,
like some fun moments in it. But
very interesting soundtrack. There's nothing. There's no score. There are just individual songs.
Yeah,
and a lot of it is like, you know, this kind of Middle Eastern kind of pop music stuff.
Yep.
And I mean, I've never heard of any of the artists before, but I had found myself enjoying the soundtrack very much.
Is it? I think I might be mistaken, but isn't it available on soundtrack available on Death Waltz?
Yes,
yeah.
And the CD, I believe it's like a Death Waltz Mondo co-release. It's available on like a slipcase, nice CD, and vinyl, a double vinyl, I believe.
Double vinyl.
Yeah.
You gotta love Death Waltz, man.
It's funny, even though I wanted to mention the It Follows soundtrack was so popular, The vinyl sold out in about 3 days. It was like a $20 vinyl. Now it goes for like $100. It was one pressing of 1,000. It's like a light blue vinyl. I've tried to get it. I can't get it. I really hope they make another one because I'm like dying to own it. This vinyl you can still get. It's readily available for A Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight.
One of the things about A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night is I mentioned this movie called Nadja.
Mm-hmm.
And if you enjoyed, or if you check out A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, there's a movie that came out in 1994 by this guy. It was directed by Michael Amarieta. And it's like a David Lynch production.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
he's like the executive producer on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it stars, Elena Lowenson as this vampire Nadja. Peter Fonda is in it as Van Helsing.
Hmm.
And there's some other people you might recognize. And the soundtrack is like a very hip, My Bloody Valentine is on the soundtrack. It has like this kind of New York, cool 90s like vibe to it.
That movie came out around the same time as Abel Ferrara's vampire movie.
The
Addiction.
The Addiction, yep.
Nadja and Addiction came out literally within 6 months of each other.
Yeah.
I got to see The Addiction. I never got to see Nadja. I want to see it.
It's great.
Yeah.
The Addiction is, it has like that sleazy Abel Ferrara vibe in it.
Yeah.
It's got
Lily Taylor.
Lily Taylor's in it.
Walken.
Christopher Walken is in it.
Annabelle Sciorra. It's a very cool movie from 95.
It's got Schoolie D in the soundtrack, too.
Yes, mm-hmm. these movies came out in the wake of Bram Stoker's Dracula, An Interview with the Vampire. There was some interesting, 90s vampire stuff going on.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was very good.
Yeah, totally.
And now I feel like we're seeing more of it now again, which is great. Yeah.
Nadja was shot all on video.
Mm.
It's interesting. It's like it looks almost like the production of it looks almost like, Dark Shadows or something like that.
Oh, wow.
It has like this really lo-fi like look to it.
Hmm.
And, it's definitely worth checking out. It's coincidentally, I just happened upon it after watching, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, and I drew the comparison between the two.
Another early 90s New York vampire movie that a lot of people have not seen it. It is unbelievable. It's called Habit. It was shot in Lower Manhattan and in New York, the whole thing. It's Larry Fessenden's first movie. He's gone on to do a bunch of other independent horror movies. Highly recommended vampire movie, Habit. Check it out if you can find it. 1995.
What's the overall vibe to that movie? Is it black and white?
Basically, it's New York in the early 90s. A guy's girlfriend has broken up with him, and his father's recently dead, and he's got a drinking problem. And one night, bopping around the city, finds this girl, Anna. And, Anna's all sorts of trouble, let's just say that. And she kind of takes him through this world of, vampirism, and it's just really cool. It's funny, I remember the scenes of him kind of interacting with his friends post, the meeting with Anna. It's just very kind of like real moments in the movie.
Yeah.
Like between the actors, I thought, for a very small budgeted movie. I had it on VHS for a while. I'm not even sure what its current status is as far as availability. But Larry Fessenden went on to do a movie, Beneath.
Oh, yeah.
What else? Hold on, I'm just going to pull it up. He's done a bunch of stuff. He's also produced a bunch of horror movies. I Sell the Dead. He was a production credit in Stakeland.
Oh yeah,
he's
Stakeland
also
was great.
Acted in a bunch of movies. You would know his face. He's interesting kind of looking guy. He's directed 22 horror movies. The Last Winter, Wendigo.
Oh yeah.
No Telling. He had the end segment in ABC's of Death 2. Yeah, he's, horror lifer guy. And Habit was his first movie.
The Last Winter was interesting. That had Ron Perlman in it, I think.
Yes.
It was like
mm-hmm.
where the, sort of like, environmental, global warming vibe to it. And like it uncovers some like, the melting down of some area. It's just really cool.
Yeah, I need to check out Beneath, actually.
I think there's a couple movies named Beneath.
This was the one. It's like these young people on like a. It's like a water monster movie.
There's one that takes
From
place
last
in a.
Year.
There's one that takes place in a mine.
No, different one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, there's some interesting stuff there with that.
But yeah, the vampire genre, one of my favorites, and it's always cool to check out, you know, the new vampire stuff that's out there. I mean, so it can be hit or miss, obviously, but I feel like Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight was definitely a hit.
I recently started getting into Hannibal, the TV show, and I slept on it for almost 3 years
now. I watched all of season one and enjoyed it, But when season two came back, I was in this flux with my moving and my life and all this crazy stuff. So I kind of missed season two, and now they're starting season three, I believe.
Yeah.
So I'm a bit out of the loop.
I read about it in Room War, because like the last issue had a big feature on
it. Right, on the cover, yeah.
And I read it, and I loved Silence of the Lambs, The Red Dragon, and also Manhunter.
Oh, no, they're all great
movies. Michael Mann film from the 80s.
Unbelievable, yeah.
Where we actually are first introduced to Hannibal Lecter pre-Silence of the Lambs.
That's true.
You know, and that movie set the tone, I feel like, for the whole... I mean, that operates...
The whole franchise, it starts there in 85, yeah.
Yeah, that's like the Michael Mann movie. It's got, William Peterson as Will Graham.
Great music, too.
Excellent music.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, just that 80s synth kind of vibe to it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but yeah, so I ended up buying the first and second season on iTunes. Well, first the first season.
Right.
And when I got three quarters through that, I'm like, all right, I'm into it. And then I purchased the second season, which I haven't started watching yet.
Mm-hmm.
But what's cool about it is they take the characters, but it's not a prequel, it's not a sequel, and it's not related at all to the movies.
Right, it is not. It is not.
It's like they're just taking these characters and developing them in their own way.
What you could say is that it's kind of Hannibal's prequel. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's Hannibal's early life, but not tied into the movies. Like that. Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it takes some of the elements from the mythos of Hannibal Lecter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that, like... You know, I'm going to use Will Graham's experience from Manhunter as an example, where like you know, they hint at Lecter and Will being friends,
mm-hmm.
and there being some crazy confrontation between the two of them.
Yes, that has
and
the,
Graham losing his mind and you know having like a very intense mental breakdown, and it kind of takes that and just develops it into its own thing, and. You know, it's I really dig it. So, what are your reflections
on
it?
No, I should have been on board for season two, but for whatever reason, I didn't get into it. What I like about it is the main character himself. He's a great actor. What is his name?
Mads Mikkelsen.
Yes, I think he's great. He's very likable. He brings this vibe to it that is very cool and interesting. And you believe it. You're believing this guy. You know what I'm saying? This guy is a cannibal, you know? And he's also like an arch criminal. You know what I mean? He's like a mastermind criminal in a way too, you know?
Yeah, he's like a comic book criminal, really.
Yes, yeah.
He's like urbane. Whoa, what the fuck's going on here? Emergency alert. Flash flood warning.
Wow,
damn.
And just so you know, everyone, I am here without an umbrella, so I don't know what I'm gonna do. Let me tell you. No umbrella for me. This weather's ridiculous.
Wow. This is a really interesting episode. All this, like,
yes, it is. All this stuff's happening.
Inclement weather going on here.
Mm.
But, yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, and the windows are open in my house. Of course they are. Yeah. Of course they are.
But, so Hannibal, Mads Mikkelsen, his interpretation of the character is, like, slightly different to what we're probably used to with Anthony Hopkins. You know, he's definitely a foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not tied down to being like this British or Scottish guy.
Right.
Like he's from some obscure European country.
Yeah.
You know.
What is Mads Mikkelsen's actual nationality?
I believe he's Danish.
He's Danish, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Right, right.
So, you know, he brings on this like sort of Euro vibe to the whole thing, but it's not tied to any specific country. So
right.
I find that interesting. And he's likable, kind of, you know. He's very charming. He's like a likable sort of guy. And, but he fucking eats people, you know? And, what is it about cannibalism in general that just like really affects people at the core?
You know what? It's interesting because the cannibal genre in horror, right? Primarily is about the jungle stuff, like the crazy Cannibal Holocaust, Cannibal Thoreau, all those early 70s kind of movies, right? Then it went away completely for decades, okay? And then in the late 80s, early 90s, we have Hannibal Lecter on the scene, right? And since then, We Are What We Are. There have been these little...
I haven't seen that yet, by the way.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Fantastic horror movie. There's been these little forays into cannibalism. And I think, I don't know, people just feel like it's one of the ultimate taboos of life.
Yeah.
To bite and eat or whatever another human being. That's It's literally like, you know, like the furthest outreach of just something you would never do. Although, apparently, when faced in certain situations, people have done it. So,
yeah,
dire situations, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. I don't know. It just, people are interested. It's just very interesting to the average man or woman, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely one of the biggest, like, bum outs that happened. You know what I mean? Like, whenever, like, you know, for
more
example.
More so than blood drinking, right?
Yeah,
more
blood
so.
Drinking. Yeah, comparing it to vampirism, like, cannibalism is by far more upsetting, you know?
And also, it's funny, HBO has this documentary out. It premiered the other week about the policeman, the New York policeman, who was locked up and sent to prison for planning out it via fantasies and websites cooking and eating women, basically. He did not do any of these things, but he had a lot of detailed notes and emails, and his wife found them. He was a cop. It was a very big story about 2 years ago in New York.
Yeah, okay.
Well, he actually went and served time for this. He's a free man now. But which begs the question of whether or not are thought crimes, and is this man really a cannibal, or is he someone who likes talking about being a cannibal? Because he's never actually eaten anyone's flesh.
And he served time for this.
He did serve time for this, yes. Huh. Some people felt it was a violation of thought. But what made it really messed up was that he had detailed stuff about women he wanted to pick out and their addresses and their... It crossed that line, basically.
Huh.
But the documentary filmmaker thought it was very interesting because, well, here we have a man who really didn't do anything. To a certain mindset, he didn't do anything. To a certain mindset. And that he's guilty of thought crimes, basically. But they're so disgusting and so messed up that, you know, he was found guilty by, you know, in the court of law.
Well, you know, that's really interesting. And, you know, I'm of the opinion that the guy didn't break any laws by writing all that stuff down.
Yes, no, some people, like public rights groups and certain groups, felt like, no, he's innocent. Doesn't matter. He's innocent. Doesn't matter. But I don't know. I guess the law and the jury and whatnot thought that a line was crossed somewhere, you know, because of the certain things that he had going on. And, you know, I guess it's one thing to visit a cannibal website and be on a cannibal, say, message board, right, which he was on. What he did the steps further. He talked about people on these boards, the real people in his life, you know what I'm saying, and address it. Like, I don't know, he apparently... I haven't seen the documentary. This is all just from reading about it.
Is this on Netflix? Or?
It's on HBO.
It's on HBO. Okay.
Yeah, it's an HBO documentary, yeah.
Check that out.
He just kind of went above and beyond, and he had some co-conspirators, and it got a little too messy. But, again, some people would think he was an innocent man. So it's very interesting.
What comes to mind are the case of, you know, Charles Manson,
right,
and also Peter Sotos, like two people who were, you know, definitely convicted of crimes which arguably they didn't commit.
They didn't really
wrong. Yeah, like Manson, I'm not saying Manson should be running free, but I don't think he's definitely not in this case a serial killer.
No, he gets lumped in as a serial killer. He may have killed Shorty Shea, actually. He may have killed one dude.
But that's not what he was on trial for, though.
No, it's not.
You know,
no,
he was on trial really for, like, isn't. The Tate LaBianca murders.
And he might have killed Hinsman. He might have killed two people.
Okay. Right. No, I'm
right.
Positive.
I'm positive. I think
I'm positive he's
people.
Killed people in his lifetime.
Right.
But he was convicted of a very specific thing, which I don't think he was actually guilty of.
Right.
And
the Tate and LaBianca murders.
Yeah, which Tex Watson and...
Right,
and,
the people who are also in jail, they absolutely committed those crimes.
But they just locked him up because he was too dangerous.
He was the ringleader.
And he was actually on death row for a while.
Right. He was already a super criminal, already.
Yeah.
From roaming the streets.
Yeah, I mean, he was
picking
a master.
Picking up chicks and...
Yeah, master criminal.
Yeah, wanting to be a rock star and... Right.
Yeah.
But
so, I mean, he was a guy who was convicted of something that just public opinion... Mm-hmm. Dictated the actual outcome of that trial as opposed to the facts, I think.
Right.
You know, and then Peter Sotos, the writer, who's a personal friend of mine, actually, and nice guy. And this whole sex criminal thing, was based around his writings and
right.
some of the photography, like,
it crossed the line,
yeah. But is he actually a sex offender?
Right.
You know, and that's, and it's like very, look up the trial. Like, yeah. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to.
It's a whole thing. Totally.
It's a whole different thing, but look up the trial and, you know, check out some of his writing. Mm. And you decide what you think about it. I'm personally of the opinion that he's not guilty of anything, but it ruined his whole, like, you know.
Oh, yeah. And it's funny. This man was married and he had a daughter and he has not seen his wife or daughter in about 4 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Ostracized. I mean, what could he can't really do anything. He was known as the cannibal cop. That was his nickname. You know, but, yeah, pretty crazy.
The cannibal
cop.
Speaking of
Manson, I wanted to bring this up. There's a new show this summer on NBC set in 1967 and set in the earlier days of Charles Manson when he wanted to be a musician, and it's called Aquarius. It's got David Duchovny on it. It aired Thursday night. It's going to be on Thursday nights, I believe.
Did it start yet?
It started. Yeah, it's on NBC On Demand or whatever. You can watch
shit.
It. I think they went ahead and pulled the Netflix. They put the whole thing online. You can watch the whole thing.
Yes.
Episodes 1 and 2 were back to back on Thursday. It was a 2-hour thing. It was actually pretty cool. It's in a way, it's about early Manson family, but it's also about David Duchovny trying to get this girl that they've kind of put under their wing, who has very high profile political parents who have hired David Duchovny to get this girl out of the family.
All right. So who plays Charlie?
A newcomer.
Some guy? Just some
random. Yeah, yeah. And of course, he's like, you know, 50 times better looking than Charles Manson, like one of those kind of things. But they didn't get some kind of, you know, scruffy kind of dude to play Charles Manson. But the music is fantastic. It's all, you know,
60s
music. And he plays Look at Your Game Girl
in
it, like twice in the first episode.
Wow.
Like, he's definitely crazy, but he's not super crazy just yet. He's at the crazy where he's banging a lot of women and gathering cult members crazy at this point, you know? But it's called Aquarius, in Age of Aquarius.
Huh. Yeah, yeah. I've always, back in the 90s, I was like a really obsessive Manson collector.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you and I think both have a pretty extensive Manson.
Yeah, no, I've read almost all there is to read at this point. I mean, there's one or two things I don't think I have read, but it's a fascinating case. It's one of the last great American crime stories, in my opinion. You know, these things just don't happen anymore. You know what I'm saying? There are, in my opinion, there are no more like serial killers and mass murders and cult. Like, if any of that stuff is happening, it's some stuff that is not getting any kind of like spotlight on it. You know what I mean? I was talking about this the other day about serial killers. The last serial killer, in my opinion, was to a degree, Dahmer.
Yeah.
And maybe Joel Rifkin after him, but he didn't have nearly as much the spotlight as Dahmer did. And there's one real answer for this, and it's because of technology, and because of forensics works, and because of police works, and because of DNA. There's, like, the law has figured out ways to get criminals so much faster,
right.
And it's so much harder to be a quote unquote serial killer than ever. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just if it's existing, it's not existing in the way that it once did. You know what I'm saying? Like, kids who get swiped off the streets, but you in Michigan, you hear about it in Brooklyn. Like,
that's,
you know what I'm saying? It's just the system is completely different. Like, these things just, if they're happening, it's just on a different level, and it's got to be some super kind of underground thing going on.
You know what's really interesting, though, is like you bring that up. It's like it almost seems like over the last, like, you know, 100 years, there's there's like these eras in crime trends where you remember in the 80s, like satanic crime.
Right, the satanic panic and the watch out for the man in the blue van and all these kind of like this mania of like abduction and of satanic rituals and
that died out too.
Oh yeah, it's gone.
It's gone.
It doesn't happen. It's gone.
And then and then there was like only a few years ago, like maybe 10 years ago, there was like this, the child molester, you know, that was like,
yeah, well, you know what, see now that sadly is still a real thing, but
the attention on it though is decreased.
Right, the attention is not there. There are no special episodes on network TV about child molestation. It's not it's just, I don't know. It's not gone. Believe me, no, it ain't gone. But it's not addressed, and it's not a part of the public, like, you know,
consciousness.
Wave. Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's funny. I wonder I find it hard to believe these things aren't happening. It's just maybe it's what the media is like trying to manipulate.
You know what's terrorism is the new serial killer.
Yeah, terrorism is the new serial murder.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. Terrorism and terrorists, ISIS, that's the youth of today's serial killer in a way, you know? And it's pretty crazy. Like, it's just, I don't know. If it is happening, it's not being put on the news. It's not being talked about at all, you know? Yeah.
You mentioned Stakeland earlier.
Mm-hmm.
What's that guy's name that... The Italian guy. What the hell is that dude's name? He did Stakeland and he did Mulberry Street.
Oh, and I think he did We Are What We Are. Hold on.
Okay.
Give me a moment here.
Yeah.
But, I need to see Stakeland.
I think that's on Netflix.
Yeah, I got to just bite the bullet and see it. It's been way too long.
It's a good one.
Jim Mickey.
Yeah.
Director. Yeah, yep. He did We Are What We Are. Yeah, same guy.
Okay, cool. I haven't seen We Are What We Are either, so we're both one down on that list.
Did you get the chance to see Cold in July?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
John did too, my brother.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He couldn't stop talking to me about it. He loved it.
Yeah, that was a great one, man. It's got, you know.
Same director too, by the way.
As what?
Of Stakeland.
Really?
And We Are What We Are, Cold in July. Yep.
Yeah, Cold in July was a good
He's
one.
Awesome. I can't wait to see what he does next. Jim Mickey.
Yeah, that had, what the hell is his name? The guy from,
Dexter.
Dexter was in it.
Michael Hall, yeah. Mm-hmm.
There was a good cast in that movie.
Yeah, yeah. Cool soundtrack. Also had a synth score going on. Nice. Set in, like, 1989. I thought it was very, definitely captured 1989 pretty well, I thought.
It had to do with abduction.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
abducting
chicks.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that was like definitely a crime of that era.
Don Johnson was great in it.
You know, Don Johnson always been one of my. Oh, I've always loved Don Johnson.
He's awesome. And how about Sam Shepard in the movie? Like, Sam Shepard is a very famous playwright who's only been in certain movies, doesn't do movies all that often, and he managed to be in this little independent movie. Kind of cool.
I back that one too.
Yeah.
What, have anything else you've seen of note?
Starry Eyes.
You're the second person to tell me about that.
Very cool, little interesting movie set in California. It's not getting the Babadook It Follows buzz, but it's bubbling up under there. People talking about it. It's on Netflix. Basically, it is very attractive young girl and a group of friends. They're all trying to be actors. They're trying to, you know, make moves in Hollywood. And the girl answers an ad, you know, like a cold cattle call, whatever kind of casting for a horror movie. And basically, you know, things are not what they seem at the old casting call. And do you remember did you see The Lost? Based on the Jack Ketchum book?
I was going to say, it's the Jack Ketchum. I don't think I saw that one.
Well, the main villain from The Lost has a nice little role in this movie. It's actually a really cool moment. And he was also in... what do you call it? Cabin Fever 2. His name is escaping me right now. But anyway, she goes to the cattle call and, you know, they like her and stuff. But, of course, they start asking her to do all these kind of weird things. They ask her to take her clothes off and blah, blah, blah. Next minute, she's, like, unconscious and she wakes up. It has this occult vibe to it. And I guess somewhat satanic, but without using the word Satan, you know, more kind of culty and evil thing to it. She starts acting stranger and stranger, and the friends notice it. And some of these friends are really kind of scumbaggy, really bitchy. All the girls in this movie are drop-dead gorgeous, by the way, which is nice. but it's a cool movie. I don't want to kind of throw the whole thing out there.
Yeah, no, I want to hear about this.
It is good. I think you will like it. It has a very brutal ending, which kind of threw me for a loop. I'll say that much about it. But, yeah, I mean, the main premise is a girl trying to make it who falls in with this interesting independent movie studio, and things are not what they seem at all with the people behind this movie studio. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, actually, Charlie, my drummer, was the guy who told me about that. And That sounds like a plot that we talk about for a movie that we want to shoot someday. You know, just like, you know, false pretenses and...
Yes. No, totally, totally. It is cool. I mean, and in this day of, like, you know, internet kind of ads for actors and actresses, I mean, I'm sure, you know, we could talk... If we knew any struggling actors or actresses, we could hear about some weird shit that they've been to, you know? I mean... There's definitely creeps out there, of course, who want to just lure young women onto a couch, so to speak.
You remember 8mm?
Totally. Yeah,
that's kind of the premise of that movie.
It's out there. Maybe nobody's getting chopped up or anything, but the sleazy aspect is definitely out there.
Now, the brutality at the end of the movie, what's the ending like? Is it like a positive or negative ending? Does it end well?
Negative ending, actually. Oh, it's a negative ending. Yeah. This girl gets pretty fucked up. It's pretty fucked up at the end. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not a happy ending, really. No, not really. No. But yeah, I thought it was pretty cool movie. Some people on certain, you know, the Facebook horror boards were like, this is better than Babadook. And it's like, you know, even though there's really no comparison.
Yeah, there's no comparison, it sounds
right,
like.
No, I know. But I feel like lately everyone's trying to... It's funny, like, in the horror world, just like in the music world, everyone's trying to find the best new something, right?
Yeah.
So a lot of proclamations of the best are out there. And it's like, you know, everybody's got to hone it in a little, you know?
Yeah.
I think, to me, It Follows... is worthy of being... Starry Eyes is good, don't get me wrong. But It Follows is like a better movie. Like, Starry Eyes is definitely a good movie. And I think you will like it, and I think a lot of people listening will like it. And I've talked to people who liked it. My brother John, like, loved it. But, you know, everybody... The proclamation of the best, that word gets crazy lately.
Yeah. So, I mean, the two movies you picked out definitely different films, but similar in the fact that they had a surreal element to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be, you know, It Follows and A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. You know, that they're sort of dreamlike in ways.
They're good companion movies. I would say if you can get to a theater to see It Follows, do that, and then watch A Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight, you know, at home. And I think they're an interesting companion movies to each other in a way.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else exciting going on?
Not too much. There's a few other movies out there that friends of mine have talked about. There's this werewolf movie, Late Phases, that's on Netflix has a good word of mouth. I want to check that out. And I will have to just freaking check out Stakeland. I mean, the director has done so many good movies. Yeah. I feel like Stakeland is probably going to be great.
Yeah, I like that guy's work.
Yeah.
And I think Jessica Lange is in that movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Before I put my foot in my mouth again, I want to make sure that's true. Because it was before American Horror Story.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say that Jessica Lange had like a small role in this movie. And I was like, oh, wow, it's Jessica Lange.
By the way, it has to be said, back in the 70s and 80s was so good looking.
Oh, man.
In the King Kong movie, oh, my God. She just looks unbelievable in that movie.
Also, the movie Postman Always Rings.
Yes. Postman Always Rings Twice?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stunning.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry, man.
Oh, wait. Who is it now?
I'm totally wrong. I'm not even close.
Different 70s bro.
Kelly McGillis is in it.
Oh, okay.
How the hell did I think
it was... Oh, Kelly McGillis in Stakeland. Oh, wow. She hasn't been in a movie in a while.
Yeah, she's in Stakeland. Sorry about that. You know. I mean, I've been making a lot of mistakes like this lately.
A friend of mine brought up the other day 70s Cybill Shepherd and posted a picture,
man,
and I went,
dude.
Oh, boy.
Dude.
Yeah.
And
The
Taxi
Last Picture
Driver.
Show and Taxi Driver, forget it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's nice to just bring up random women on here, by the way. It's just nice, you know.
The other night... The other night I was at this show at a local heavy metal venue called St. Vitus, and it was the band that was playing was Portal, this really, really cool band from Australia.
By the way, I have to say, Portal, I think, are one of the only scary bands left
in the entire metal world. Yeah.
They're scary. I think they're scary. They have the vibe, they have the look, you watch their videos... You put their music on your headphones and you're sitting down somewhere, you feel that.
It's a nightmare world that they create.
I love it. And they're literally one of the only bands that I could say that about, right?
Yeah.
Now. Anyway, continue.
But at the venue, they also play, you know, they've got a video thing in the mm-hmm. back area where they right. sell merch. There's like, they're playing like, you know, movies with mm-hmm. no sound. And Taxi Driver
was
being played.
Interesting.
And I thought that was very fitting in some ways.
Wow, I wonder who decided to throw that on.
There's always like some weird stuff playing there. Huh. You know, sometimes it's like Judas Priest, like, you know, live footage or something like that, or right. Scorpions. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes it's movies. You know, some weird stuff you've never seen before.
That's
but
cool.
It's kind of, this is kind of a movie in and of itself, is the Portal Curtain video. You ever see that one?
Yes.
With the puppets
yes.
and
yes. Oh, my God. It's so
like
great.
That movie. I mean, I saw it. It actually kept me awake at night, that movie. It's like so. It's such a nightmare reality that video takes you through.
Yeah, I think certain bands like to think that they're scary and frightening. But no, they really aren't.
No, these guys are really.
I think Portal actually kind of has that. One of the only bands that has that, like, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, if you guys haven't seen that video, check it out. That's backed by Necromaniacs.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, looking forward to, like, you know, seeing what happens. I feel like the horror on TV is getting interesting, you know. There's more windows being opened there. I need to kind of dive back into the Hannibal thing.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the last season of Walking Dead very much.
Absolutely.
I liked it better than the prior season. American Horror Story, I'm so out of the loop. Perhaps I will dive into the new hotel season later this year.
Just an FYI, man. I believe that Jessica Lange is no longer with the series.
Oh, the franchise? Yeah.
And she's done. Apparently mm-hmm. she said that she's finished with you know, working in that franchise.
Interesting.
But
sure,
I mean,
a long run.
There's I still recommend going back and checking out some of the earlier ones. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they were great. She's great in it. I feel like she kind of is a huge component of that series. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to see how they picked that up.
Well, the Hellraiser, speaking more of horror on TV, Hellraiser was a big letdown. If you read the comic and know that character, they didn't even really scratch the surface, which all the cool stuff that book had.
You mean Hellblazer?
But Hellblazer, I'm sorry. Man. And the Constantine show. It had some nice moments. It actually may end up on another network. Maybe.
Oh, cool.
they're really pushing for it. But something worth noting is another Vertigo DC title is headed to TV. They apparently have shot most of the season. It's called Lucifer.
Oh.
They have put a bit of a comedic bent on it, unfortunately. I saw the trailer. But what's worth noting is that the group A Million Moms has decided to boycott it, and they're trying to get 1 million signatures to have NBC yank it from the schedule.
1 million moms.
Yeah, 1 million moms against the Lucifer show. Yeah.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Based on the trailer they saw. You can look this up online. It's pretty retarded.
People need
And
more.
You know how many people have signed the petition? A whopping 7,000. So go screw yourself, 1 million moms.
1 million moms.
Yes. A group called 1 million Moms. Yes. They think it's glorifying Satanism and glorifying this horrible blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, the trailer it's not even all that bad. And the show looks more like kind of like a sexy show than horrific in any way or promoting Satanism. It just, you know, check out the trailer and let me know what you think. But yeah, this 1 million Moms group wants it off doesn't want it to be on network television.
Speaking of, comic book franchises going to TV, they're the Daredevil Netflix
series.
Yes,
worth bringing up. Fantastic. Home run. I can't wait for season two. Can't wait for the other properties Netflix rolls out. The Jessica Jones images have been out there. Looking forward to that. That was a great comic book called Alias. Power Man, Iron Fist. I mean, I can't wait.
I have a huge... Lots of questions about Power Man and Iron Fist.
Yeah,
Netflix.
Can't wait to see what they do.
Is Power Man going to have like that, you know, yellow shirt and the headband
the thing,
or
like,
what? What's his deal?
Well, in the last 15 years of Marvel, he's just pretty much been like a diesel dude, like no yellow shirt.
It's like a tight t-shirt.
Right, man. just kind of looking like a regular guy, and I'm assuming they're going to do that. But if he happens to be wearing a yellow shirt, I think it'd be pretty great. Actually.
Yeah. I think it'd be cool to at least make a nod to that. Like,
oh,
like
God,
an afro.
Unbelievable.
You know.
And even Iron Fist, he has an interesting costume. What will that look like? What will his costume look like? His costume has changed over the years too, you know.
Definitely.
But it's a great character. Danny Rand. and
yeah.
Cage.
Iron wow. Fist has always been a great character. Do you know there's a deadly hand, deadly fist of Kung Fu, like Shang-Chi is back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And oh, wow. I picked up the first issue a couple of weeks ago, or, you know, I saw uh-huh. it at the comic shop and I got it. I haven't read it yet. It's like laying out in the living room.
Another thing worth bringing up is Tom Hardy, who's in the new, you know, the new Mad Max and some fantastic movies in his own right, has approached Marvel saying, "I want to be the Punisher."
Oh.
What are your thoughts on that?
100%.
I give it to him.
Dude,
I was
just
told,
give it to
yeah,
him.
I'm like, give it to him. Give it to him.
Nope. Tom Hardy rules, man.
And people are like, oh, he's short, blah, blah, blah. Short,
fuck,
whatever.
Man.
No.
Yo, so is fucking Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
man.
Give him the movie, dude. Yeah. I think I'd be totally interested to see what he does with that.
My thing with the Punisher and movies and
TV,
they've
been a lot of missteps.
Fuck it up, man.
They fuck
and
it up, yeah.
They need to not approach it like a comic book hero.
That's why I'm almost thinking the Punisher is a better Netflix property.
Yes.
It's a better cable TV or Netflix property, because the movie, it's just not enough, maybe. Like,
yeah.
Because he has a great backstory.
Oh, yeah.
He's a veteran.
Yep.
And then his family's killed by the mob. He's got such a story
yeah.
that leads him to be the Punisher that a movie, a two-hour movie, is not enough.
No.
It's really not enough. An episodic
yes.
show would be ridiculous done right.
If they treated Punisher like they treated Daredevil.
Yeah.
Because Daredevil,
yeah.
it's like the guy that plays Daredevil is Matt Murdock,
yeah.
man. Like, he is that guy. It's like everything's so on point. You know, Mark Ruffalo is the Kingpin. The guy that plays Foggy.
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Mark Ruffalo. Did I say Mark Ruffalo?
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo yeah. is the Hulk.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry
okay.
about that.
We mess up names all the time.
Yeah, it's, you know,
it's okay.
one of those things.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? But, Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk. Great.
Charlie Cox is Daredevil.
Charlie Cox.
He's
amazing.
He was from Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah.
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a grittier, it has like a John Woo feel to it almost. Mm-hmm. It's like
that single shot fight scene in
oh,
early
yeah,
episodes.
Man. Yeah.
It was really cool. It reminded me of the True Detective single shot
yeah.
Escape scene.
Yeah. So which
oh, bring
the
up
Punisher,
True
yeah.
Detective for a moment. One thing I do know about it is that they're Pizzolatto, the guy, you know,
yes.
behind it. There is no supernatural element in this season. It's you know, crime cop heavy, you know, season, but he, you know, but there is some heavy stuff in it, apparently.
Yeah.
I know pretty much nothing, but I do know that there is no supernatural element like there was in the last one. And he said that, you know, that's just for this season. Maybe the next season, something like that will come back, blah, blah, blah. This one is a bit more just kind of like, I guess, reality based,
yeah.
you know, but apparently there's some nice dark twists and turns in it though, too, that, you know, should be interesting.
The reality, though, is that even the first one didn't have a supernatural element.
But it teased it, though.
It teased it, yeah.
It did, and it did. Like, you definitely thought it did. I thought it did.
Yeah.
But at one point, we thought there was a monster coming out at one point. I mean, it definitely did, though. I think it did.
Yeah.
That was the beauty of the show. Like,
yeah.
I had no idea what the fuck was going to happen in that show. I loved it.
I like that it didn't have that. I was like, you know, because I like that you didn't know what the fuck was going on
no.
until the end. You know?
Because, like, it was just that they were there. I don't know. It's Woody Harrelson was amazing. I mean, I just loved it so much.
What I like also is that I want to see those characters again, but I know that they shouldn't continue.
Right. I want to see it just because I want to see it. But in reality, it's probably A, not going to happen, and B, shouldn't happen, because it wouldn't be the same.
Yes.
Right.
You can't
get that again, I feel like. I don't know.
No. I mean, the situation of those two guys and that can only be, like, I think their story was told.
Very comic booky, right? I always thought it was very, very, like, vertigo-y, almost like adult comic book kind of thing.
Absolutely.
The whole season, I think.
Have you read any of Pizzolatto's books?
No. It's one of, you know what?
Galveston.
I gotta get it.
Read Galveston.
I gotta get it.
He has other stuff out there, but I read Galveston, and it's like... Actually, I think I'm looking at it right now. If you want to take it home here tonight,
absolutely,
borrow it. It's great.
Thank you.
And it's Galveston was like dark, man. And it just doesn't end well. And it's just depressing. It's the same type of trip, except that actually, the True Detective series, it kind of ended on an upbeat.
It did.
Note.
It actually did. Yeah. It was. I mean, the downside was that there's still quite a few of those you know, bad dudes who were responsible for those crimes out there, but they themselves made it through. Like, we at one point you thought, you know, the two main characters were going to be dead
yeah.
at one point, but they made it through, which was nice.
You know what I wouldn't mind seeing, though, is a revisiting of that story, maybe with different people going after some of that crime.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
But I mean, whatever. Now it's getting to be more like, you know, some Marvel Comics
shit. That ending reveal, like when he's like talking with the accent, like the killer, it was just like so creepy. Like he's in the house with his mom or whatever. It was just so
fucking
like,
sister or whatever.
It was just so creepy.
Making like, flowers.
Yeah. You know? And the maze, like the running through the maze in that last episode. It was just like, yeah. Whoa.
It's like, come die with me, little priest.
Yeah, yeah. It was just like...
These references, man, you know? And you and I both tried to read The King in Yellow.
It's not easy to read.
No.
No, it's not. I wish it was a little easier of a read for me. I guess stuff from the late 1800s, it's not as easy to read as I thought. I don't know.
Yeah, it was definitely there are things in there that were cool and I don't know, but it just didn't grab me.
The actual drawings that were out there of The King in Yellow and the interpretations are like these really cool interpretations, but you know, the story itself is a hard read.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know if you ever read anything like Clark Ashton Smith or any of those early like weird fiction guys.
Mm.
Some of that's, you know, H.P. Lovecraft obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like sometimes it's hard to dive into the story just because of the prose is like, not like it's hard to read, but it's just a different style that you're not accustomed to.
Yeah, like H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Allan Poe, I sometimes get both of those vibes from them. Maybe a little less from Poe. Poe's a lot of stuff is a little more kind of poem and, you know, except for like the major stories, but his major stories versus, say, H.P. Lovecraft's major stories, there's a big difference, actually, I think. And even though Poe's are older, they're actually easier to read. It's pretty crazy, yeah. You know?
But also, I mean, Edgar Allan, I mean, H.P. Lovecraft is like more of like a pulp fiction writer. Like he was more in like the pulp magazines.
He helped kind of invent like the cosmic, what the hell is out there horror. Like he literally kind of helped invent that, you know? Edgar Allan Poe was just writing from like a different place completely.
He was more of like a literature writer, published books and things like that.
And he wrote about older times.
Yes.
Lovecraft was writing about kind of like right then and there to a degree in a lot of his stories. He was writing about crazy shit going on in the 20s or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And Poe was, you know, Mask of Red Death and all this stuff is hundreds of years, older
like historical
events and times. Right, exactly. Yeah. Yep.
You know, and then
the plague is, you know, far removed from the plague when he's writing about the plague.
You know, H.P. Lovecraft was like, you know, his work appeared in like pulp magazines and whatnot, along with like Robert E. Howard and all those other great writers.
Right.
You know, so I think that maybe like the actual, even though I love all those writers, their actual writing is at a different level than like Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
And maybe that has something to do with it. I don't
totally,
know. Just
totally.
An idea, you know. So anyway, that wraps it up, man.
Yes, this was a good one. I liked we went off into a nice TV tangent there, which was okay. But again, get out there and see It Follows in the theater if you can. And A Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight is 100% backed by us. Maybe some people think it's a little too artsy, a little too indie-ish, but you know, we both enjoyed it very much.
I like the girl in that movie too.
The music and the atmosphere, that kind of really sold me on it, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you all very much for listening. We promise we will be back sooner next time.
Yeah, let's try to get on. I mean, I'm going to be around for the rest of the year, not really doing much, so let's do this more often.
We'll do this more often this summer. Yeah. Yes, and thank you all for listening and all the support.
All right, guys.
Cheers.
Have a good night.